House, please come to order. The members, please indicate their presence by voting. House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. All members, please, again, indicate their presence by voting. We have a quorum. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Representative Kay Wallace. Would you please rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to sing an Indian song. Oyaneyanehana, O Great Spirit in the sky, help me to live, help me to die. Oh, yane, yane, anna. Amen.
Representative McClain, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Boucher?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Hearing no objection. I may need an assistant, Representative Wallace, on that. But the clerk certifies the correctness of the journal for the previous day.
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 110th day in House Supplements number 17 and 18.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 110th day in House Supplements number 17 and 18 be approved as certified.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection. The journal's been certified. Are there guests to be introduced today? Are there messages from the governor?
Dear Representative Cotton, on this date I have signed the following bill and I'm transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. House Bill number 114, relating to the examination of regulations and of opinions and decisions issued by courts and agencies on the law of the state, Chapter number 19, SLA 1989, and Senate Bill number 85, relating to the issuance of private activity bonds and providing for an effective date, Chapter number 18, SLA 1989. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
The Senate approved the following citation and it's gone to enrolling, honoring the contestants and volunteers involved in the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 76 Resources, thus passing House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 76 Resources, an act relating to confidentiality of certain fishery reports and records. The Senate passed and returned Committee Substitute for House Bill 223, Judiciary, an act authorizing municipal clerks to take oaths, affirmations, and acknowledgments. And that bill has gone to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following and is transmitted for consideration. Senate Joint Resolution Number 43, Fahrenkamp, Sturgiluski, Eliason, Halford, Fisher, Fakes, Coghill, and Jones, relating to implementation by the Congress of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States.
Refer to the Judiciary Committee.
And Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 226, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to misconduct involving possession of a firearm by a person who is intoxicated or under the influence of drugs.
State Affairs and Judiciary.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other communications?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Reports to standing committees.
The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 13, Telecommunications Regulation Policy, and recommends it be passed. The report was signed by Donnelly Chairman, signing do pass, Donnelly, Doctor, Finkelstein, and Grunberg. Having no recommendation, Lehman and Collins. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 174, Municipal Referendum, and recommends as follows. The report was signed by the co-chairs Grunberg and Gall, signing do pass, Miller. Having no recommendation, Grusendorf, Gall, M. Davis, Martin, Ellis, and Davidson. House Bill 174 has no further referral. Any changes? The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 255, Permanent Fund Dividends, Incarcerated Felons, and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute with a new title and recommends it do not pass and attaches two fiscal notes. Report was signed by Boucher Chairman. Signing do not pass, Donnelly, Hanley, and Zawacki. Signing do pass, Menard and McLean. Having no recommendation, Finkelstein and Boucher. House Bill 255 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 279, TRS vesting for part-time teachers, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. Report was signed by Ellis Chairman. Signing do pass, Ellis, Gruenberg, C. Davis, and Jackal. House Bill 279 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 25, Labor and Commerce, Common Interest, Community Managers, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Donnelly Chairman. Signing do pass, Donnelly, Boucher, Lehman, Finkelstein, Gruenberg, and Collins. Senate Bill 25 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Are there reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Jessamine Ann Tracy, 1989 Alaska State Spelling Bee Champion by Representatives Navarre and Swackhammer. Citation honoring Nikiski, Junior Senior High School, First Year Athletic Program Achievement, and is requested by Representative Zawacki. Citation honoring Nikiski, Junior Senior High School Student State Champions, 1989 Future Problem Solving Bowl by Representative Zawacki. House Concurrent Resolution 36 by Taylor, relating to Admiralty Law Defenses of Exxon and the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
You refer to the Judiciary Committee?
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference to House bills.
House Bill 323 by Menard and Larson, an act authorizing a Big Lake Ice Classic.
State Affairs Committee.
House Bill 324 by Brown and M. Davis, an act relating to the content of oil and gas leases and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 325 by Boyer, M. Davis, Ellis, Finkelstein, Gall, Jackal, and Kopanen, an act relating to public school health and personal safety education.
Refer to Health, Education, Social Services, and the Finance Committees.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill 181 by Gruenberg.
Excuse me. Could we stand at ease for a moment? Back to order. Would the clerk read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 181 by Gruenberg, an act relating to the private manufacture of an alcoholic beverage and providing for an effective date. The Hess Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute with the same title and due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Ellis Chairman, signing due pass, Gruenberg, Furness, and Boyer. Having no recommendation, Gall and Ellis. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title and due pass. Report was signed by Gruenberg and Gall. Signing due pass, Gruenberg, Gall, Ellis, and Davidson. Having no recommendation, M. Davis and Martin. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 181 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 181 be considered engrossed to advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the bill is in third reading. Would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 181, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to the private manufacture of and the definition of an alcoholic beverage and providing for an effective date.
Is there discussion? Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have just one question. I would like to know what the limit, what is the limit under federal law? We're talking about that this will not exceed the limit imposed under federal law, and I would like to know what that limit is.
Mr. Gruenberg. We'll stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Mr. Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The regulations that the representative from District 9 referred to are found in the Internal Revenue Code regulations. We're dealing here with wine and beer. And wine, according to Section 5042 of the regulations, federal regulations, are as follows. For that any adult may, without payment of tax, produce wine for personal or family use and not for sale. the aggregate amount of wine exempt from tax under this paragraph with respect to any household, that's not per person but per household, shall not exceed 200 gallons per calendar year if there are two or more adults in such household, or 100 gallons per calendar year if there's only one adult in such household. And the regulations with respect to beer is the same language that any adult may, without payment of tax, produce beer for personal or family use and not for sale. Aggregate amount of beer exempt from tax with respect to, again, any household shall not exceed 200 gallons per calendar year if there are two or more adults in the household, or 100 gallons per year if there is one adult in the household. And adult is defined as a person who's reached 18 years of age or the minimum age, if any, established by the local law, including state law.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall committee substitute for House Bill number 181, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk take the roll.
33 yeas, 6 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 181, Judiciary, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent, the roll call vote on final passage be considered a roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Clerk, read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 188 by Navarre, Swackhammer, and Grunberg. An act increasing the number of Superior Court judges designated for the 3rd Judicial District to provide an additional Superior Court judge at Kenai and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. Signing do pass, M. Davis, Miller Martin, Grunberg Gall, and Davidson. Ellis has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass and attaches one fiscal note and 20 notes with analysis. Signing do pass, Hoffman, Swackhammer, Brown, Copeland, Ulmer, and Rieger. Having no recommendation, Phillips and Larson. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 188 be considered engrossed in advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the bill's in third reading. Would a clerk read the bill for the third time?
House Bill 188 by Navarre, Swackhammer, and Grunberg. An act increasing the number of Superior Court judges designated for the 3rd Judicial District to provide an additional Superior Court judge at Kenai and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have passed out on each member's desk a sheet that it lists some of the reasons why an additional Superior Court judge is needed in Kenai. Kenai has the highest number of filings per judge in the state. They've experienced a 26% jump in trial activity. Civil cases are currently not being assigned to the judges in Kenai because there's not enough room on their calendars. There's currently one full-time Superior Court judge in Kenai and one retired judge who is working pro tem as a Superior Court judge in Kenai. He is retiring in June. He has been working since 1982 pro tem part-time. He's tired of it. He gets paid only a portion of what it would cost if a Superior Court judge was assigned there in place of him, and that addresses part of the fiscal note. He is currently, if you look at your fiscal note that I've handed out, it shows that it's going to cost an additional $70,000 this year and then $136,000 per year in order to pay for the additional Superior Court judge. I want to address it. Currently, it only costs $62,000 for the Superior Court judge who's working almost full-time. Last year, he worked about 75% of full-time. This year, his work days so far this year are up 34% over last year, so he'll be above. He'll be doing more work than a full-time judge. And he's getting, and he and his part, the part-time secretary, he's a very experienced judge, he and the part-time secretary that are working there cost the court system $62,000. If you just had a Superior Court judge there, just someone who did the amount of work that he is currently doing, that alone would cost $138,000 a year. In addition to that, if you add the secretary, on. That's an additional $37,000. In addition to that, a law clerk, which he does not currently have, although it certainly is justified given the caseload that he handles. So the fiscal note is artificially high, I think, by comparison to what they're getting now at a very reduced rate. They nowhere else could they get the type of experienced judge that they are for $62,000 a year, a judge and a half-time secretary. As I mentioned, they're currently not assigning civil cases to the judges in Kenai. They're doing it. They're assigning those to visiting judges from Anchorage or Valdez. That's a real problem with respect to family cases, children's cases, child custody, divorce, things like that, because the pretrial work is being done in some instances by the judges in Kenai, and then a visiting judge comes in. All that results in is a lot of delays and inefficiencies in the whole system. I think, Mr. Speaker, that this is something that has been on the priority list for the Alaska Bar Association. I have a bunch of letters from attorneys around the state, primarily in the Kenai, Soldotna, and Homer area, and also in the Anchorage area, who do work in Kenai. There's been some discussion that maybe they ought to just move one of the judges from Anchorage to Kenai. Anchorage has the next highest caseload in the state, and what that would result in would be moving one to Kenai, increasing the load on the judges in Anchorage, and it would result in Kenai having a lower caseload, but Anchorage having then the highest caseload and higher than the two that would be in Kenai. So that doesn't make sense. I think that the fiscal note is justified. Judge Hansman who is retiring, has been doing a yeoman's job for the last 6 years in Kenai, and he's just not going to do it anymore. The other Superior Court judge there, Judge Cranston, has also been doing a yeoman's job. They're both overworked. We're not treating citizens around the state, particularly in the Kenai Peninsula area, in the same way that we are in other areas of the state. It's costing them money to travel to Anchorage to get their motions heard, in order to also to go to trial in some cases. It's inefficient. I think that the fiscal note actually is higher than it should be reflected, and this will save money for my constituents in Kenai. It will also save time for Anchorage people who lose a judge from time to time to go to Kenai to handle the cases that are in Kenai, and I would ask that the members vote in favor.
Mr. Pettijohn?
Are we in third reading, Mr. Speaker?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I would like to remark on this bill. I have to oppose it, even though I do not really dispute what the former speaker said. I think there are other ways to do this, though. I just am not going to vote for more state employees in this period of our budgetary problems. I think you could transfer a judge from Anchorage to Kenai to cover this problem and change it from a district court judge to a superior court judge. You take one of the district court judges out of Anchorage, ship him to Kenai, make him into a superior court judge, very little extra cost to the state, minimal, and you would accomplish what you're doing here. But I cannot support it at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Superior Court judge is the proper judge that should be assigned to Kenai. That must be authorized in statute. You can't just upgrade a district court judge to a Superior Court judge. I think that, and that's why the bill's in front of us. You have to authorize it in statute. I think that what the previous speaker was talking about, maybe that's something that ought to be handled next year in the court system's budget. Maybe there are some savings that can be realized, but it doesn't detract from the need of the Superior Court judge position in Kenai.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reason I co-sponsored the bill is, although I practice in Anchorage primarily, I've recently had an opportunity to practice in Kenai and have experienced firsthand the problems they have there. The switching around of judges, I don't know. I'd have to hear from the court system how they felt about whether they could delete one or transfer a position down there. That may be a way to deal with it. I don't know. but I do know that they need a judge down there. And if we delay, there's going to be very significant problems to the people down there, and also possibly additional costs because of, you know, if there are criminals running around and they can't get them tried and they can't get them incarcerated, that may cause additional expenses and suffering. Same with family violence, all sorts of cases. As a result, frankly, as I understand it, because of the seriousness of the problem, they're not trying any civil cases in Kenai with Kenai judges. They can only try civil cases, including cases, family cases with significant domestic violence, whenever they can get an Anchorage judge down there, and that's not fair to the people who have to endure the problems. Thank you.
Mr. Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question of the representative from Kenai. I noticed in the packet that the judge in Homer, which is now a district judge, I think it's Judge Jim Hornaday, who's retiring, is being downgraded to a magistrate. And I just wanted to know the rationale behind this. It talks in the packet about caseload, but it doesn't go into a lot of detail. And I just want to know why Homer can't support a district judge, but Kenai can support two Superior Court judges. And maybe you have the information. If so, I'd like to hear it.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'll address that in a couple of ways, and the court system is probably not going to agree with at least one of my assessments. I think that the district court judge in Homer should not be downgraded. The reason that it's reflected there is that the court system currently is planning on not filling the district court position in Homer. That's the court system decision. I don't agree with that. I'm going to fight with the court system to see that the district court position in Homer is stays there. I think that it's justified. I've looked at the annual report from the court system. The caseload in Homer certainly justifies a district court judge. The population base and the court facilities in Kenai and the caseload in Kenai justify an additional Superior Court judge. One thing that I failed to mention is that the visiting judges so far this year are at double the amount of time that they were last year. So in addition to the 34% increase that Judge Hansen has seen, there's also a 50% increase so far in the number of visiting judge days on the Kenai. So the numbers are going up, not down. The position's justified, and with respect to the position in Homer, I'm going to argue with the court system about that, and I expect that will be a budget battle next year.
Mr. Taylor?
I'd like a brief at ease. For
stand at ease.
Here.
House, please come back to order. House, please come back to order. Would the House please come back to order? Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make a couple brief comments on this bill. Having served in the capacity of a district court judge and been both and done work on the Homer bench and also in Kenai, I would like to give a little background on Judge Jim Hansen and what he has gone through and the type of service he's given to this state. Judge Hansen wanted to retire back about 1982. The court system begged him to please not retire because it would be difficult to replace him and to get another judgeship assigned. So Jim stayed on, working full time. Very conscientious man, and he spends a great deal of time on children's matters and other matters. He does a tremendous amount of district court work, which is rare. Most Superior Court judges don't. And he takes the time to do that and to work on the little cases, too, right along with the big ones. Now, a judge in this state cannot legally retire until age 60. He turned 60 back in 82. He's still working out there every day because the caseload is there and he doesn't want to see the people inconvenienced and put out. The difference between his retirement pay and the pay he's getting right now is 25%. So if he just walks off the job, he's getting his 62 grand or whatever it is. Instead, for 25% of what it would cost him to have somebody in there, he's going in every day and working long hours and weekends to try and keep it going. And every year he keeps, somebody tells him in the system, we're going to try and replace you and get another judge in here and get this caseload taken care of, and every year it's another fight. This is probably the worst year in the world to have this thing come up because of the number of employees that have already ballooned into this budget. But if there was any justification for the 547 brand new employees we put into this budget full time, there's absolutely justification for replacing this with a full-time position. I have talked with the prime sponsor. It's my understanding from the court system that the judge assigned to take Mr. Hansen's place will do about 70% of his work on the Superior Court bench, and about 30% of his work will be on the District Court bench. And he will be known as a Superior / District Court judge. We've created a lot of these. We did this in Sitka. We did it in Wrangell. We did it out in Kodiak the first time with Judge Roy Madsen. And it's worked very well in that they're authorized to work in either courtroom, and you can they're very flexible as far as scheduling is concerned into various courts. I think this would be especially helpful on the Kenai Peninsula in light of the soon-to-be attempted, apparently downgrade, of Judge Jim Hansen's, Jim Hornaday's post, which he has retired from, in the Homer area, because this would allow that new judge to also go down and service that community when district court cases were needed. So, though I am totally opposed to any additional inflation within this budget, this is certainly a meritorious case, and I have to vote for it, and I hope the other members will, too.
Ready for the question? The question before the House is shall. House Bill number 188 pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, take the roll.
39 yeas, 1 nay.
House Bill number 188 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on final pass to be considered roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? No objection. The effective date clause has been approved. Clerk, read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 195 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to divorce, dissolution, and annulment, and amending Rule 84A, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with the same title and do pass. Concurring, Ellis, M. Davis, Gall, Grunberg, and Davidson. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute and do pass. And attaches a zero fiscal note. Signing do pass, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, Omer, Barnes, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Kopanen, Phillips, and Rieger. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 195 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have amendments?
Amendment number 1 by Grunberg and Rieger, and it starts on page 1, line 25, after V, delete all material, insert litigation.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
There is objection, Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This language, the language that presently appears on that in from lines 23 to 25, was added in the Finance Committee, and the phrase in the extent to which attorneys are used is not as clean as it could be, and with the concurrence in of my co-sponsor who made the amendment in the Finance Committee, we have agreed that the a little improvement would be the word litigation meaning the lawsuit.
So is there further objection maintained? Is there further objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment has been adopted.
Mr. Speaker. Clerk,
Mr. Grunberg.
Could we have a brief of these, please?
Where are these? House, please come back to order. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
Amendment number 2 by Rieger and Grunberg, and it starts on page 5, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number 2, ask unanimous consent.
I think you better close it. Well, we can wait a little bit. Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, the objections are maintained. On page
3, there's the bill is essentially in two parts. There's one part that deals with divorce and one part that deals with dissolution. In the part which deals with divorce, there is a reference to career assets, which says that an award or division of property or whatever must take into consideration the extent to which each spouse contributed to the acquisition of career assets. In the dissolution section, the language referring to the extent to which each spouse contributed was not put in. So what this does is make it consistent throughout the bill. It's to me a cleanup amendment.
Is objection maintained? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number 2 has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that committee Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 195 be considered engrossed in advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill's in third reading. Would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 195 Finance amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to divorce, dissolution, and annulment, and amending Rule 84A, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure.
Is there discussion? Ready for the question? Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have a question of the sponsor that I had tried to get an answer to during the break here, and I'd like to ask him to speak to page 1, line 11, residency of military personnel. It seems to me, from all the years that I was in the service at any rate, that military personnel choose their residency and pay taxes and have all other responsibilities and benefits from that. So perhaps I'll make certain that a military personnel is not being unduly encumbered beyond his normal choices with the Soldiers, Sailors, and Relief Act.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. This relates to Section 1, page 1, lines 10 through 7 through 16. If the member from Juneau would look at the phrase on line 16, for the purposes of this chapter, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about for the purposes of divorce and dissolution only. This statute was enacted a number of years ago to benefit military, not to harm them in any way. Under the laws, the constitutional law of the United States, generally, in order to get a divorce, you have to be a domicile or a resident of the state. You have to have the intent to permanently reside in the state. The problem with our military service people is that they are here on permanent change of station, permanent duty orders, and they may remain permanent residents of Montana or Nebraska. And they shouldn't have to change their residence simply if they want to get a divorce. Nor should they have to go back to Montana and get the divorce. Particularly these people don't have a lot of money, and it would be a material hardship on them not to be able to divorce in Alaska. Therefore, back in territorial days, what the legislature did was to say, if you had already been here for 1 year, you're in the service, you didn't have to be a domicile. And a case called Lauterbach upheld that and said that was okay to do it like that. The problem has been that there should be no, and at that time they had a 1 year residency period for divorce itself. Subsequently in the Adams case, they held that you couldn't, for a domicile, require a 1 year residency requirement. The legislature then amended the residency requirement statute and said if you're a domicile, it's only 30 days. It's immediate, but you have to wait 30 days to get the decree. They never amended this statute. So what we did in this bill initially last year in the Hess Committee in 1988, we said as long as you are permanently stationed here, you can get a divorce if you're in the military, even if you're not a domicile or a resident. When the bill came through again this year in the Judiciary Committee, the issue was brought up, and some people said, well, we should require, if you're not a resident and you're in the military, some minor waiting period. So what this says now is before you can file a complaint, you have to be here 30 days, and then there's another 30-day wait under the civil rules to get the decree, to get the hearing. So the person will have to be here a total of 60 days before they can get their hearing.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I also have a question for the prime sponsor. In the case of a dissolution where either children are involved, a domestic violence complaint has been filed, In either of those situations, will it now be necessary on the passage of this that both parties personally appear before the court as opposed to the way it has been in the past?
Mr. Grunberg?
The answer to that is no, not unless certain events occur which require heightened scrutiny. And I refer the member, the minority leader, on page 9 to section 14. And only in those cases in which there is a level of heightened scrutiny, and I possibly misunderstood your question, when there is a child, the answer to that is yes. And generally, if there's a child, both parties will have to be there unless, and I would refer the member to the same section on page 10, lines 3 through 9. It says the court shall require the presence of both spouses at the hearing unless the court finds on the record it will be a significant hardship for one of the spouses to appear and that a fair agreement has been reached. And even in that case, the court may require the person to testify or be available by telephone. So if it's going to be a hardship, they don't have to appear, and the courts will be able to use their discretion.
Mr. Taylor?
Well, that's a provision that I really object to. Very frequently we find that the parties will come in and want to work out their own dissolution. That's why we provided for dissolutions. What we're doing through most of this stuff on dissolutions today is saying, you can do dissolutions, but you're really too stupid to do them. You have to have a court looking over with heightened scrutiny. You have to have lawyers involved in several different instances here. If you go get a lawyer, then it's okay. Or that alone, just having a lawyer may cause now heightened scrutiny where somebody else has to show up. What you're really saying is that people aren't competent to do their own divorces without heightened scrutiny or lawyers. And I just think that's going backwards from what this legislature intended to do by allowing people to go in and pay their filing fee and take care of their own problem and have a judge look it over and sign off on it. Now, what you're saying is any couple in Alaska that has a child and wants to do a dissolution can't do it unless both parties show up. Oftentimes, these people during this process of filing these papers have split up. One of them's gone south to work in Albuquerque. The other one's still here. May be the husband, it may be the wife with the child. And they want to get this thing over with. So they come in, they file their papers, and now the judge is going to look at it and say, whoops, you've got a child. Have to have the other person here. Then you have to have another hearing, which means the judge has to set everything up, send notice to them, and so on. Come on in at this time, and we'll have a hearing to determine whether or not this is an undue hardship for you to appear. Having made a decision that it's an undue hardship, now I can let you do it on the telephone. It's putting a tremendous stumbling block in front of a whole bunch of people that would just like to get a divorce and get it over with. And all of this is being foisted upon us by a group of people that are all concerned because people are too stupid to know how to do their own divorces. And look at how badly they get treated because of it. Well, every one of these people walked in there and signed on the line and swore and raised the right hand before the judge and said, this is what I want. And if anybody thinks that these are easy situations to go through or not heart-wrenching or gut-wrenching, I should say, they are not. They're the most difficult thing, one of the most difficult things any human being ever walks through. And to put additional stumbling blocks in the way just to enhance divorce attorneys, I think, is a very bad step for this legislature to take.
Mr. Gall?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think it's a shame that the previous speaker would impugn the motives of people suggesting that this legislation is being brought forward because somebody thinks that somebody else is stupid or somebody's trying to make money. The issue in this legislation that the previous speaker is addressing is the requirement for heightened scrutiny when children are involved. And I think one of the best arguments was made by the previous speaker that often when people are involved in a divorce action, what they want, or a dissolution rather, what they want is to get the matter over with as quickly as possible. And I think the idea is that when children are involved, maybe as quickly as possible is not the best standard. And maybe the court should take a look at the situation before they just sign off automatically and make sure that the welfare of the children are being protected. And it just seems like basic common decency and not at all a sinister plot.
Mr. Boucher?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, this is one of those pieces of legislation that appears to cover a lot of things. We've mentioned We've mentioned the length of residency and the child's best interest and most of the people, but most of the places that I see here, retirement benefits comes up continuously in it. In fact, it's mentioned more than anything else, and I would like to know from the sponsor or the person that's managing this bill what, in effect, is accomplished there by the changes that are made related to retirement benefits. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to draw the attention of the body to a report which was done by the Alaska Women's Commission called Family Equity at Issue, a study of the economic consequences of divorce on women and children. I think this was a very illustrative report in terms of explaining to people, by looking at the numbers of what actually happens to men and women who get divorced, to explain why a heightened degree of scrutiny is necessary and also why it's important to redefine career assets for purposes of being able to be distributed equitably. 54% of divorcing men had pensions or retirement, compared to only 33% of divorcing women. And the value of the man's pension was three times that of the wife's. Similarly, in no-fault divorces, we find a very unequal treatment in terms of what happens to custody of children, custody of the home. Fathers with physical custody of the children almost always received the home in a divorce situation. That is 93% of the time. Whereas when mothers received custody of the children, they only were awarded the family home 68% of the time. With regard to alimony, which is one of the ways, of course, that some of the value of income can be distributed, alimony was only awarded in 10% of the divorces surveyed, and it lasted for only 1 year and provided an average of only $500 a month. Similarly, with regard to child support, there are significant inadequacies in terms of what happens in divorce in Alaska. Child support was awarded in 80% of the divorces where minor children were present. However, the average amount per child in this child support was only $191 a month. That's about half of what it costs to provide for child care in Anchorage for one child per month. It's far below the standard usually used to determine welfare eligibility. Indeed, as you look through the results of this study, you see that men and women are treated very differently as a result of experiencing divorce. Divorced men experienced a 17% increase in their standard of living, if you look at their financial situation, whereas divorced women experienced a decline of 33% of their income. I would encourage members to take a look at this study because I think it demonstrates that even though no-fault divorce has been theoretically a benefit to people who, as the speaker from Wrangell pointed out, just want to have it over and done with, because of the way in which the courts have treated divorcing parties, in fact, people end up being treated very differently, and that's particularly true for mothers with children. I would encourage members to support this legislation as an important step forward toward achieving greater equity between parties who experience divorce. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Martin.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Speaker. For those who are concerned about the military aspect of this bill, I have written to the Defense Department, and in two cases, one from a legal officer of the Defense Department and one who is a private civilian who voluntarily does work on behalf of military people. Both of them agree that this is good, that this would give the military people another out in trying to solve the problems wherever they may be transferred, as long as they don't have to change their residency. So they thought that the law was good in that respect. The questions I've had, and I expressed it at the Judiciary Committee, and it still hasn't been answered to my satisfaction. And I talked to the governor's representative last night, who wanted my support on the bill, and I said, generally, I'm in tune with it, but I still have some concerns. I'm not so naive to know
to not realize today marriages are entirely different from what we used to think, that marriages were made in heaven and marriages were made until life do us part. Today marriages are made for different reasons of convenience or whatever. In this kind of a bill here, I look at marriages perhaps to be made for a good way to perhaps get things you're not entitled to. Because I don't believe that a person who marries one day and then in a week later files for divorce should take the poor guy for everything he has. And I don't know if you're going to say, well, you must remain married for 6 months or at least a year or 2 years before you can take the guy to the ringers. The guy may have married you, you may have one or two children that are not his, and then suddenly you find yourself in a bad situation where your spouse is suing you for divorce, your retirement and everything. And I really feel that somehow or ever we may make it too lucrative for people to dissolve their marriages, and we're going to cause more hurt and pain for humanity and society in a whole than by curing what we think. I read that women's report, and of course there are all kinds of statistics to realize how inadequate the system is today. But I think this completely reverses it and perhaps gives the spouse, and in most cases the female spouse, an advantageous reason for getting divorced.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I would like to speak to the points raised by the previous speaker. And I believe that the courts, and I do not believe this bill changes that, takes into consideration assets separately that were acquired before marriage. And if, in fact, there was a pension or a military retirement or some other thing that was acquired prior to the marriage, then the court would take that into account and would, I'm certainly sure that if there was a marriage of short duration, that there would be nothing of that prior assets given to the spouse. But while I was off the floor, and I am sorry about that, there was an amendment passed to this bill, so therefore I'm going to reconsider it. As far as I'm concerned, the amendment that was passed, amendment number 2, does great violence to this piece of legislation. And it renders a mother that has stayed home and raised children, instead of working and contributing to the marriage that way, it puts her at a great disadvantage, the way that amendment was written. Because if you look at the amendment, it says, to the extent to which is each spouse contributed to the acquisition of, and then it inserts words, to the extent to which each spouse contributes to the acquisition of. If you take that into the context of this bill and you look to a mother that has stayed home and raised children instead of going into the workforce and has not been able to contribute monetarily to those assets, in my opinion, you put them at a great disadvantage. And I'm really sorry I was not on the floor when that amendment was before us. I think it was a really bad thing to do. After the bill passes, I have every intention of reconsidering it and of making a motion to rescind that action tomorrow.
Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, just one thing. Career assets is defined in the bill, and career assets includes the value of homemaking and child-rearing services provided by the other spouse in the bill.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I remember when this bill was before us in a previous session, I did have some concerns or some questions about career assets. I think retirement benefits have probably been a part of divorce statutes in many states. But it was my impression at that time that career assets was somewhat of a new concept, and I would ask how many states include career assets in their divorce statutes. And I have one other question while I'm on my feet, Mr. Speaker. In reviewing the testimony, and I think this was something that I experienced when I was on the Hess Committee when this bill was considered before, I can remember a great many people testifying, but I don't remember that there were very many men who testified as far as this piece of legislation was concerned. And as I review the committee minutes from Judiciary, I see that we had one man who happened to be visiting from the Yukon Territory Assembly who testified about his divorce laws in his country, in their territory. But the others were the Women's Commission, the Women's Resource Center, University Women, the Women's Lobby, and I think that that's fine. But I remember when we attended the Children's Caucus, that at one point we had some dads there, and I think it was Dads Against Discrimination, who had some real concerns about child custody, child support, what was happening with the support they were paying that wasn't really going to the support of the child. So I guess my questions are two: how many states do include career assets in the divorce statutes, and do we have much input from men who have experienced divorce when this legislation was being considered in committee?
Mr. Schultz? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to call balderdash on the Women's Commission report. I do believe that that whole thing started out on a premise that...
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to rise up for the order. I think that's
impugning the motives of a state commission, and I would ask that the members' remarks be kept in order.
Objection, Mr. Speaker.
Let me read something to you folks here. There's a decorum in debate. Please sit down while the presiding officer is speaking. There's also another thing here that when the presiding officer is speaking, the members should sit down.
Oh, okay.
It is not the person but the measure that is a subject of debate. It is not allowable to arraign the motives of a member, but the nature or consequences of a measure may be condemned in strong terms. So the point is, you can't condemn another member's motives. I don't believe that was the case in this particular instance.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Speaker, point of order.
On the same subject.
What's your point of order?
I wanted to merely state that I think the accusation as concerns a member, that member...
You are not raising a point of order, Mr. Taylor. You're discussing something other than raising a point of order. Mr. Schultz, you have the floor.
Thank you. What I was trying to bring out, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sorry that it caused a little furor there, but on the report, I do believe that they started out from a basis feeling as though that the woman has somehow through the court system come out on the short end of the stick through the divorce hearings. And I do believe that if there were a men's commission, in fact, and if there were a study done and it were done in the same basis and they started out with the same premise, that I believe that they would be able to come up with the same kind of statistical data showing it from a different point of view. And I just oftentimes question reports that in fact are done by people and organizations that in fact are coming from one particular viewpoint. So that's the point that I was trying to make. Thank you.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am not one to stand on this floor and talk about my personal life, how many kids I've got, or that sort of thing. But today, let me tell you, as one that has been through the court and in this process, that whether you look to the women's report or not, I'm here to tell you that this bill is very badly needed. Not for me, because I've already been there, but it's badly needed for other women and for their children and for their protection. And I, as I said before, have every intention of reconsidering this bill and doing everything in my power to take out the amendment that was put in there, amendment number 2.
You've made that point a couple times now, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The report that has been referred to, and Lord knows if a person can't speak about something like that on this floor, then we don't have a free speech.
Mr. Taylor, please address the
I'm
bill.
I'm addressing that, Mr.
You're not addressing the bill. I would appreciate it if you'd address the bill, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, sir. In the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure is a rule called 90.3. That establishes a formula by which child support is now set in the courts in divorce cases.
Judges also look to that in dissolution cases for guidance as to whether or not the child support agreed to between the parties is appropriate and falls within that rule. Affidavits have to be filed by each party to notify the court as to their income, what it's been. They even have to submit their tax return. That establishes now what child support is. The report that was referred to was not based upon 90.3 because those statistics couldn't have been gathered by then. It's only been out for about a year and a half. So the report indicating whatever the income may have been or whatever the child support agreed to by the parties may have been during that period of time does not contemplate Rule 90.3. And that establishes that out of the net income of the party who bears the responsibility for paying child support, that they shall pay a flat percentage of that net income, up to a maximum net income of $60,000. Maybe the sponsor of this bill would be kind enough to tell this body, under law right now, without this legislation, what is required if you're earning $45,000 net income per child. And maybe the person who spoke about the low amount of child support being paid would be kind enough to tell us how much child support is paid for one child or for two children. So I believe it goes to 27% on two children of your net income up to $60,000. It's a lot more than the numbers that were given to this body. Furthermore, the parties in a divorce action have to submit, and an order is entered, that if they fall behind on that child support, if there's going to be a levy on their wages, they have to notify them who their employer is and so on. And we have had all kinds of difficult problems arise because of legislation that has been passed as a result of this levying statute. So as concerns the that provision, I think it's totally inappropriate for us to further include, and I have yet to hear an answer, but that's because everybody's been speaking, and I'm going to defer and sit down here, so I hope we can hear an answer to the question raised by the speaker from Anchorage, and that was, how many other states have this career asset provision, and what impact and effect does it have? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Grunberg?
Thank you. I was hoping to take all the questions at once, so I figured I'd wait till everybody had a chance to ask their questions, make their comments. If I may, a number of people have spoken. I'd like to take them in the order that their questions were addressed as best I can. The minority leader spoke on two different occasions. I'll take his questions first. The first issues he raised related again back to page 10, the requirement in heightened scrutiny cases, in certain cases, for people to have to both be before the court. The example he raised was, how would the court do this if one of the spouses had moved away, say, to Albuquerque? Well, obviously, in a case like that, there'd be a hardship, a significant hardship. And the language on page 10, lines 3 through 9, would simply, when the other spouse came in, impel the court to say there's a significant hardship, and particularly if the spouse living in Albuquerque were available by telephone, that would meet the requirements of the statute. The real issue here, and the minority leader, who has an extensive experience in this area also, and whom I respect, is well aware of the, and has talked in an effort to protect both sexes, that this should be a fair body of law. It shouldn't be weighted towards the men, and it shouldn't be weighted towards the women. This provision here, this particular type of heightened scrutiny, when there are children involved, is generally going to help the men, because in more cases than not, the women get custody. It's still the case. And in certain cases, there is a deal made. I will not seek more child support if you give up custody. And by having both parties there, the court can make certain that somebody isn't being browbeaten into giving up custody. So this provision, in my opinion, will help a number of men in this state. And I think that should be known. The minority leader's second group of questions related to Civil Rule 90.3. And that's a rule that was adopted
and will be the subject of different legislation. It's legislation that's now in the other body, that we need to look at child support generally. This bill does not look at child support, and I've had a note from the representative from Juneau on that issue. It is not intended to address the issue of child support. One of the things that hopefully our committee will be doing over the interim is looking at the family laws generally at some of these other areas, and this will be one area. Rule 90.3 is a sliding scale, and it says if there is one child, then the payor pays 20% of their net income. Two children, 27%. Three children, 30%. Four or more, 33%. It's a sliding scale, and that's the answer to the member's question on that. But it's not particularly addressed in this bill, and it needs to be addressed, and I'm not denying that. That needs to be looked at, and we need to make certain that our child support laws are fair. With respect to the representative from District 10 who spoke next, had a question about retirement benefits. The law in this state has been and is now and has been for a number of years that retirement benefits, pensions, are and must be considered. If you do not, if the court does not consider retirement benefits, that in itself is reversible error, because they are a marital asset to the extent they were earned during the marriage. And the present law and the statute in this respect, and I'd refer, Mr. Speaker, you and the member, to page 3, lines 15 through 25 of the bill. That is the only law in this state governing the division of property in a divorce. And it states in a judgment in an action for divorce or an annulment, or at any time after a judgment, if they haven't divided the assets, they must divide the assets. And looking at lines 19 through 21, the current law is that unless the equities of the balancing the equities require it, you do not invade premarital assets. And that would include pensions earned before the marriage. It would also include inherited property. Next questions were raised by the representative from District 13 concerning marriages of short duration. And in a recent case, the case of Rose versus Rose, in a marriage that was 2 years, and there was no significant commingling of assets between the parties, the court could treat the property division as an action in the nature of what's called rescission. Simply divorce them and keep the people in the financial position they would have occupied had no marriage taken place. Each party takes their own. And that, plus the comments I've just made concerning premarital assets, which the representative from District 14 also mentioned, plus what were called the Merrill factors, which is the landmark case in this state, that you have to take into consideration the length of the marriage, that makes it much easier to divide the property in a case of short duration. So you can't just marry somebody, get a share of their assets, and divorce them the next week. Under the Rose case, there'll be just rescission. The next concerns were raised by the member from District 14. And the first one I'd like to take on that, Mr. Speaker, is the question concerning Amendment Number 2. And I know that the member from Juneau also has a question on that, and we will take a look at that amendment. But my interpretation is the same as the representative from District 8. And if the members would look in the bill at the definitional section, and I'm referring now to page 13, lines 24 through 29, the definition of career asset itself includes the assets, the ability to earn money resulting from the spouse's education, profession, or employment that was acquired at least in part as the direct or indirect contribution, including the value of homemaking and child-rearing services provided by the other spouse. And it's my opinion, and I'm certainly happy to look at this again, but it was my opinion in agreeing and co-sponsoring the amendment that the concept of the extent of contribution is contained within the definition of career assets itself, and there should be no question about it. Legal counsel informed us that, in her opinion, that it would make no difference, and this was the reason. With respect to the question from the member from District 9 who spoke next, I think I've answered the question concerning retirement benefits. If not, I'll provide more of an answer. The next question was how many states have considered career assets. In a landmark case called Sullivan versus Sullivan from the Supreme Court of California involving a medical degree, the court said the trial court should consider that particular type of asset. Other states considering statutes now similar to Alaska's include California, Wisconsin, and Connecticut. I don't know the results in those states, what their legislatures are doing, but I know the courts are starting to consider the concept of career assets, and that Sullivan case is one case where they've done it. Other cases go the other way. It's an evolving area in the law. And the next question from the same representative was how many men testified on this bill. This bill is basically a bill that's been before the legislature now three times. It was House Bill 496 in the 14th legislature, 189 last legislature, and it's now 195. And we've incorporated the record from the previous bills, and not a number of men testified this time. The member is correct on who she cited in there, but the record from previous testimonies speaks for itself, and we have had men look at this. A number of family lawyers have looked at this. People who practice represent both men and women. And I think that answers everybody's question. I would like to put on the record that, as the members know, I'm a family lawyer, and I do have a conflict of interest, and I would, for the record, state that and ask to abstain from voting. But I want the record to be very clear in that respect. Thank you.
We'll stand at ease. Order. Place a call in the House. Mr. Taylor?
Mr. Speaker, while we're awaiting the call of the House, could we revert back to introduction of guests?
Without objection, under introductions, Mr. Taylor.
I have three old friends in the gallery, and I've known them a long time. They're all from Ketchikan, and it's Marge and Rudy Bukovich and Rosemary Crowder. They're back in Gallery A. Marge and Rudy Bukovich have their daughter Rena with them, and I was blessed to have her on my staff for the first 2 years I was here. They're wonderful people, and I'd like you to please help me welcome them.
Is there other discussion on House Bill 195? We'll stand at ease until we get a quorum. I'll lift the call at this point. So further discussion on House Bill 195, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak very strongly in favor of passage of House Bill 195. There was a comment made in previous debate from a member from Mountain View about making, with this legislation, making divorce or dissolution more advantageous for certain parties in these proceedings. To give advantage to one party over another. Well, one party does have advantage in the proceedings based on statistics that are before us in the proceedings. This isn't about convenience or advantage. The whole debate and the reason for this legislation is for increased equity and very simple justice in what goes on in our state. There's been a concern expressed on this floor by members about the increase in our welfare rolls, people on public assistance. Well, those comments relate very directly to this item of legislation before us, because in addition to just the sorry state of our economy and many of our communities in Alaska, increasing the number of people that qualify or are eligible under federal income guidelines for welfare in the last couple of years, the kinds of inequities that we see in divorce and dissolution proceedings lead very directly to an increase in our welfare rolls. We have all heard time and time again that the vast majority of people on aid to family with dependent children are single women supporting children. and many of them are the victims, and I'd stress that word, victims of divorce and dissolution proceedings because of the inequities that are played out in the current system. I'm very attracted to the part of this bill that requires heightened scrutiny in cases where there's evidence of domestic violence. And it's a very sorry fact that in the state of Alaska, 26% of women report having been in a violent relationship. That plays very directly into the intimidation that's involved oftentimes in these kinds of proceedings. The effort to get this resolved quickly, to either take the kids or keep the kids, to make some sort of inequitable distribution of property, and yes, career assets. All of those things come into play, and if you think it doesn't happen in our state, go and talk to some of the people over at the abused women's shelter, and you can see very clearly demonstrated in their lives and their conditions and the conditions of their children that this happens day in and day out in the state of Alaska. It's about equity, and I would urge the members to vote in the affirmative.
You ready for the question? Mr. Grunberg? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's important for us to make a couple distinctions here. We're encompassing both the divorce law, where both parties have attorneys, they appear in court and go through a formal divorce. But we're also encompassing the dissolution law, a law that we set up so people could conveniently and without attorneys go into court and get their matters resolved. What we're doing is, according to the person carrying the bill on the floor, we're going to take the step as the leading state in the United States to put the words career asset into law. We've got California, Wisconsin, and apparently one other who have similar statutes in law. We're going to take this step, and we're going to put it not only into divorce courts, but also into the dissolution question. It means somebody has to make an evaluation of what a career is worth. Well, that means what's it worth in the future. Now, we already have in case law retirement benefits and that the spouse should receive a share of the retirement benefits. That occurred because we had a case where a person in the military was going to be retiring. They'd lived together as husband and wife for 40 years. The man wanted a divorce. The only asset they really had, and his wife was in poor health, and the only asset they really had was his career military retirement. The court said for the first time in Alaska, we're going to look at retirement as an asset. That's the only thing that's available to see to it that this woman gets just treatment. That exception then became the law. Now all cases where there's retirement on either party, remember, the first call the attorney makes is to the Division of Retirement and Benefits or to the Teamster Retirement Fund to find out, send us an actuarial approach to what this retirement is worth today. We need to value it. We need to value it so we can go into court and let the judge divide it. That doesn't mean that the man has had 15 years, 20 years, and that they've had a marriage of that duration. That means that they may have been married for 5 years or 7 years, and he's got 5 or 7 years in the Teamsters. Or maybe he had 14 in. Maybe he got 5 or 7 before they got married. Now we're going to have to value that portion of that existing retirement. That's already law in this state. What we're adding to it is not only are we going to figure out what the retirement program is worth and make certain that the other spouse gets half of that, we're also going to say, what's your career going to be worth in the future? So that every architect, every engineer, every guy holding a limited entry permit, what's that going to be worth as a career in the future? What if he loses that limited entry permit 2 years later because it's confiscated or taken by a court? What if the engineer suffers a malpractice suit and loses all of his assets? Does she, at the same time, end up, or he, maybe his wife had the degree or the limited entry permit, does he assume any of the liability that goes with that career in the future? Oh, no, no. No, we valued it today, guessing upon what he or she as a movie star, or he or she as a fisherman, or a limited entry permit holder, or a school teacher, what that career may be worth in the future, and you get a piece of it today. That has to be added in today. I think that's a very dangerous step for us to take. And the only cases that have allowed people to look at career valuation, even the California case cited by the gentleman from Spinard, that was the only asset they had. It was an exceptional case. Well, they said, good grief, this young couple has nothing. They've worked their hearts out for about 8 years to get to this point. He at least has this degree. Let's let him pay off over a period of time or a lump sum payment some portion of what that advantage may be to him in the future, because that's all they have. And all of a sudden, the exception is now becoming the rule. And what we will do by this is implant this into law. We'll do it not only in divorces, but in that dissolution case where they just want to get things worked out. I see this happen time and again. The parties come into the court, and they want to get things worked out. The wife has decided that she knows the husband needs to have his business if he or his job if, in fact, he is going to provide for them. She says, I'll leave that alone. You let me take X, Y, and Z and the two kids, and here's where we're going to go to, and this is what we're going to do. I want this amount per month. I want to make sure the medical's taken care of. Will you please do that? And then we will let you go on to earn your living and do what you can to help us. And if you do well, I have the right to come into court and ask that child support be increased. And they do. In fact, our division of child support and assistance comes in routinely into court, especially since 90.3 came into effect and redoes and increases the amount of child support. Those safeguards and safety nets are all right there right now. And they're doing it a lot of times for a very good and valid reason. And what we're going to say by this is, nope, you can't do that. Heightened scrutiny says the judge has to review it. And 90.3 says the judge can't do anything but give you that amount of child support. And that has, instead of becoming an exception, these things have become the rule. And we are now going to be one of the first states in the union to force that onto people. The single biggest cause of divorce in the state of Alaska, though it may be shocking to most people in here, number one is money, the lack of it, the amount of bills that got piled up and they couldn't make it. And you can talk about all the statistics in the world and try and blame the fact they don't have any money on the legal system because they happen to wander through a divorce. Believe me, they don't have any more money after the divorce than they had before the divorce, and they aren't in any better shape as far as handling those funds after the divorce than they were before it. And does it end up with more with women and children ending up on the welfare roll? Certainly. He hasn't got any medical coverage. He works sporadically. He logs 6 months out of the year. He works construction or he drives a truck. And while he's doing it, he's got some medical, and they can share in that. The day the job ends and the construction project's over with, he doesn't have any insurance anymore, and neither does she or the kids. So what does she do? She's on welfare. She's got 100% medical, dental, and optical for herself and the kids. And if you don't think people don't milk that system, they do. Because she can end up a lot better off and with more benefits than he can pay her, and probably could have paid her if they'd have stayed married, if she gets into this system that we've set up. So we are a good part of that problem, too. And try and foist it off onto this system and say, well, these people are being taken advantage of. Not necessarily. Some of them are taking advantage of the system. I just don't want to see us, Mr. Speaker, start forcing down the throats of people that are already having their guts wrenched out by a divorce action, a heightened level of scrutiny, having to appear when they don't want to have to appear, forcing agreements upon them that may not work for their lives, and letting people continue to make their own decisions about these things is much better for them and for their children than it is for us to intervene in our wisdom here and try and force them to do these things. This bill should be defeated, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've listened to all of the debate on this legislation, and I feel like I need to say something to explain the position that I'm going to take. I'm going to vote against this, and the reason I'm going to do that is I was a party to a divorce 21 years ago, and I was a very young woman. I had two small children. In those days, we didn't have dissolution available to us. I had to have an attorney. The attorney charged me lots of money, but I can tell you here today that the agreement that was made was not better than one I could have made had I done it by myself with the agreement of my spouse at the time. It wasn't a fair agreement. There's no such thing as a fair divorce. There's no such thing as a fair disruption of a family. And there's no such thing in life as fair in general. Life is not always fair. It's just the way it is. And the legislature can't make it fair, and we can pass 50 million laws, and we're still not going to make it fair, and divorce is still going to be an ugly, nasty, awful thing to have to go through. People's lives are going to be disrupted. There's going to be inequity. And this legislation isn't going to change that. I think it's just going to make it worse. Thank you.
Mr. Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to say a few words from personal experience. I tell everybody that I'm a veteran of three wars. I went to Vietnam twice, and then I married a Viet Cong. I don't know how this bill would address this, but I honestly married my first wife twice and divorced her. And then I had to marry her a third time to get half my stuff back, thanks to the court system.
Lieutenant Collins.
Thank you.
Tough act to follow here.
That's a tough act to follow. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for this piece of legislation, although I have some reservations about it. And my reservations really relate to the inclusion of the career assets. And particularly because the bill is gender neutral. And I can see what the bill is trying to do, and I support that. It's really trying to help particularly women, and primarily women who are disadvantaged with the current system. And I am supportive of that. But the concern that I have is that because the bill is gender neutral, and rightfully so, that this is really a double-edged sword for women. And there are many women who have put a tremendous amount of time and effort into their careers, who are going to find themselves vulnerable as a result of this legislation and having their assets attached. And I think that it's something to consider when you think that 50% plus of the women going into engineering, going into medicine, going into law, are women. And so the architects and the engineers and the doctors and the lawyers that we're talking about here are, a lot of them are women and going to be women. And don't be surprised if we might find ourselves back here 5 or 10 years later changing that. Thank you.
Ready for the question?
Question
before the House. Shall committee substitute for House Bill number 195, Finance, amended House? Mr. Majority Leader? House has been called. Who's missing? Oh, thanks. Representative Barnes? I believe the call has been satisfied.
Then may I have the floor?
You have the floor, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let's talk a moment about career assets, because that seems to be a great concern to many people, and there's been a great deal of debate about it. Let's look to the young wife who gets married, and let's say the two of them have just finished college. And the wife goes to work, and she continues to work and put her husband through law school or medical school, and that person finally graduates. Or let's switch the roles and say it's the husband who, the two of them have graduated from college, and the husband goes on to medical school to pursue his, or the wife goes on to medical school to get a doctor's degree. And the husband works, or the wife works, and puts that spouse through school. And after that has happened, and the particular spouse has expended all their time and energy and money putting that spouse through school, and after they've set up their practice, for whatever reason, they get a divorce. The spouse that has been left without the doctor's degree or the law degree or the engineering degree, as the case may be, and put the other spouse through school, has nothing. that she didn't have or he didn't have to start with. But the other spouse is the one that has the greater earning capacity, directly responsible to the person who worked to put that spouse through school. That's why I believe career assets should be in here. How many times have you heard about a wife supporting her husband through law school or dental school or engineering school, and shortly thereafter there was a divorce? And in some instances, that wife was left with kids. They get absolutely nothing out of the law degree, medical degree, or engineering degree, as the case may be. And I feel that's wrong. I feel that it should be up to the court to be able to look at that and look at the contributions that particular spouse has made and in some way see to it that they're justly compensated for their working to put that spouse through school.
Mr. Taylor?
I realize we've spoke many times on this subject, and I appreciate the patience of the chair, I really do. But the last example and the person who spoke before it needs clarification. I'm going to give you an example that occurred in my practice. School teacher, female, married to an alcoholic construction worker. The kids were raised. Divorce occurs just about the time she retires. Under the existing law, he is entitled to one half of her retirement. She can't live on the other half of the retirement. She's back working again. Now we're going to say he's not only entitled to one half of her retirement, but to the value of her career if she wishes to go on and use her degree. He has no degree. He didn't help in the years when they were back there raising those kids. Once in a while he worked. What you're saying is now we value her career on top of her retirement. So now she pays him more when this law goes into effect than she's already having to pay him right now. Many people on this floor may have thought I'm only standing up here speaking for men. I've seen this thing cut the other way, and it isn't a real pretty sight when you see it happen that way. She's still out there working today because this exception came along about retirement. And immediately got knee-jerked right into the spot where every case going through, we had to value retirement. And it has to be gender neutral. So we have to do it. Now you're going to say the same thing for careers. There's a lot of lady school teachers out there that are going to be impacted by this one. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ready for the question? Mr. Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to rise in support of this legislation. And I just want to let the rest of the members of the body know, as we've heard the debate go around, how complex these issues are and what all happens during the process. And I just make the announcement a little off the subject, Mr. Speaker, that I'll be introducing a bill on the Men's Commission. I'm looking for co-sponsors.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think a number of these comments just deserve one final response. The situation, the economic situation in this state has had a number of different and unforeseen effects. One of the effects that was not foreseen, it was foreseeable, but it wasn't foreseen, was the effect that it would have on people who divorce. Before we got into the recession, and I'm looking primarily in Anchorage because that's where my experience has been, there was a lot of money, a lot of property, and the issue of career assets wasn't a big issue because there was enough property to go around. The economy was going well and people were doing well financially, and it was a question of dividing up the assets in an equitable manner. The issue was still there, but it didn't come up very often because nobody really was concerned about it. Now the opposite has occurred. Property values have gone down in Anchorage. The economy's gone down. There are a lot of debts. The money's been used up often to feed the mortgages. And the businesses are failing, so the businesses don't themselves have any value in many cases. So the only things that may be left are some debts and earning capacity if the person has a good job, one of the spouses has a good job. So in many cases, because of the change in the economy, the focus is, during this period of time, on the earning capacity of the spouse. Under current law, that earning capacity is not considered an asset, and it's not even generally utilized when you determine whether a person is entitled to alimony, to spousal support, because of a case called Messina that says not only is the person not entitled to alimony unless they would be entitled to a greater than 50% share of the marital estate, but two other factors have to be there too. Number one, there can be insufficient property, and that is often the case. But it's the last leg of Messina that I'm going to discuss that is the real kicker. And there has to, in order to get alimony in this state, there has to be a reason that the person can't support herself or himself, such as physical disability or small children. And the courts say, well, sure, the person can go out and get a job as a waiter or a busboy. They can support themselves. Therefore, the 100...